702. WhatsApp Aubrey
on 072-702-1702.
Yeah, we're going to speak about spinal tuberculosis, and I'll be joined by Dr. Lusanda Bomela, orthopedic spine surgeon, as she helps us understand what this is all about. Yeah, but while we connect with Dr. Lusanda Bomela, somebody says, could it be finally the alleged or even suspect fact that the law, as we have been taught to accept and consent consent to it, is today is slowly being exposed to being a lie? I don't know whether respect is the law. I don't know whether being just respectful to each other, even though we deny, we don't agree, is the law. It's, you know, maybe we'll have that conversation as we continue. Dr. Lusanda Bomela now joins me. Dr. Bomela, thank you so much for joining me. I really, really appreciate your time.
Hi, Aubrey. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Much, much appreciated. I had never heard of spinal tuberculosis until tonight. What is spinal tuberculosis?
Well, it's actually a disease affecting the spine whereby a bacterial infection, which is caused by a bacteria called Mycobacteria tuberculosis, goes in through the bloodstream and goes and affects the spine. And as you know, the spine obviously is divided into different sections, so it can affect the neck, it can affect the spine that is covering the chest area, and then the lower back as well.
How is this bacteria introduced to the bloodstream?
It would usually have come from a primary site. So most people, they would get a lung type of TB, which we call palm TB. And then there is like a group of people, about 10%, who would get TB anywhere in the body but outside of the lung, which is called extrapulmonary TB. So then if it goes and it goes either to the bones or it goes to the spine, it would have come through the bloodstream to that area. So TB is something we can inhale from just the actual air.
So it's airborne, this bacteria, if I understand you correctly, Doc?
In a patient who has got TB already and then they cough in an environment which is like your closed environment, a small shack or a small house where most people there's overcrowding and there's not good aeration. So you would then get the spread. It's like the primary person doesn't necessarily have to have gotten it via airborne, but most of the time that is how the lung type of TB would be spread.
And so, if I understand you correctly, what would start out as lung TB or palm TB, as you've said, evolves through its entry into the bloodstream into other parts of the body, and in this particular case, it would be the spine.
Yes. So that is how other people would have what we call extrapulmonary. So it's outside of the lung.
Yes.
Yes.
How does it present?
Well, Aubrey, I think let me break it down again according to which part of the spine is affected. So if you're looking at the neck area, your patient will have, you know, neck pain, which is progressive and ongoing. They might have a problem with lifting up their neck, depending how many levels of that spine is involved. And if the destruction of the actual bones, which are called the vertebra, is quite extensive, you can find that it can spread to involve the spinal cord and the nerves. Nerves being the same nerves that would make the arms and the legs move. So they would either have weakness in the arms, weakness in the legs, or just end up having even to be paralyzed, depending how extensive the infection is. And then we get what we get call an abscess. Obviously, when you have any form of infection, you can have an abscess. So if you were to have that in the front of the neck, that can end up even pressing obviously the pipes that help you breathe and eat. So problems with eating, breathing, and it can be quite extensive if left untreated.
How extensive?
So that would be the neck area.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't finish. And then going down to the most common area is what we call the thoracic spine, which starts at the top of the chest down to about just above your lower back. Those patients usually will present with a deformity at the back. So someone will say, hey, I see a bump at your back. I'm trying to stay away from too much medical terms, which we call, in this case, a gibbous. So you can find it common with some form of deformity where the back doesn't look straight, or that person can then present with problems standing up, problems walking, weakness, and then the lower back, the very lower back, is where they can have also weakness of the legs with walking, but their bowel and bladder can be affected as well. So being able to control urination, being able to control when you do your bowel movements. So that's why I said it's actually quite extensive how it can present depending which part of the spine is involved.
Indeed.
As well as the normal constitutional symptoms. Those are the symptoms that you can get when you've got normal TD, which is loss of weight, loss of appetite, the night sweats, and fatigue. But not many patients who've got TD have that, and the night sweats can be very extensive.
How extensive is spinal tuberculosis in South Africa specifically, Doc?
Well, Aubrey, when you look at the numbers, and then we'll give you the numbers, it doesn't look like it's big numbers, but when you compare it to global numbers, it's quite extensive. So we are talking about something like, one of the latest studies in 2018 done in Cape Town was saying 798 patients per 100,000, those are the rough numbers we'd be looking at. But of that, only about 10% will get TD that is outside of the spine. But if you look again at that number, 1 to 5% of those people would then end up with TB spine. So that's why I'm saying that if you look at the overall numbers, you're like, oh, this doesn't really seem that impressive. But then you have to look at what and who does it affect. In our situation, we're talking about the lower social economic population, and it can be quite extensive. So what impact would that have? So I don't like just looking at the numbers because they don't really tell the story.
Yes.
But
yes.
We've been known to have the highest incidence in the world.
In the world, eh?
Yes, us in India, yes.
So what would be the ideal sort of conditions for spinal tuberculosis to thrive, Doc?
Oh, that's actually a good question. Thanks, Aubrey. You have to look at, as I said, the socioeconomic situation does play a role into who is affected. So we are looking at patients who are malnutritioned, which you wouldn't think in this day and age would be something that affects our population, but it does. You look at poor immunity whereby things like HIV, which usually are opportunistic infections, predispose you to a poor immunity, and that can predispose you to TB, which is just even the lung TB as well as the TB of the spine. Mm. Then you just look at people who are on chronic medication that would decrease their immunity extensively, like steroids and chemo and radiation. So anything whereby the immunity will be decreased will predispose you to what we call an opportunistic infection, which is what TB is. It gets an opportunity to thrive in an environment where the immunity is low.
Well, my guest is Dr. Lusanda Bomela. She's an orthopedic spine surgeon, and we're talking about spinal tuberculosis. Do you know somebody who is living with this condition? Are you living with the condition? Any questions, any comments that you might have for us, please give us a call on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. It appears, as you said, Doc, that the numbers don't tell the full story because, we get into that space where we just look at the statistics, we look at the numbers, and we come up with opinions and conclusions. And you're saying that there's a deeper story here to be understood about the socioeconomic issues that lend themselves to having this bacteria get a lease on life, I suppose. What should we understand other than just the biology and the physiology of it all? Talk to me about the other very important peripheral stuff of a socioeconomic nature that we should be aware of around the issue of spinal tuberculosis.
Thanks, Obi, about that. I think it's looking at it at more globally. That's how you have to look at something like TB. And I know in this case we're talking about the TB of the spine because it will be affecting children. It affects your socioeconomic group, which would be the people who are employed, and it affects the elderly. So there is no one who can be spared. And I would like to also remove that part where it can be just related, as I said, to something like HIV, hence I mentioned malnutrition, immunosuppression, anything that can decrease your immunity, as well as we have a very high burden of it occurring in places like KwaZulu-Natal and as well as Cape Town, whereby when I was working there, we found that quite a lot of the patients that came to us for treatment actually were HIV negative. So you want to remove the stigma which is related to having something like TB of the spine or just general TB. Secondly, whereby you are improving the social situations where people are informed, this is something medical. This is something treatable. Before there was that whole stigma that if you had something like TB, it would be the end of you. And with antibiotics and combined things like surgery, if it was something like a TB spine, we can do so much more to improve the outcome of the patient. I always say to my patients that, especially when you're not sure and the imaging doesn't really show a clear picture of is this TB or is it cancer, I was like, if you have to choose, believe me, you want to have TB because once we give you the correct treatment, which is usually medical treatment, most patients will improve, including having lost their function, like the weakness of the legs and all of that. So the earlier we can diagnose, the earlier we can make people aware that, yes, the results are devastating, but this is something treatable if you know where to get help and having access to information. So for me, I think the drive of something like TB spine and just generalized TB because it's the week of TB awareness is to then change people's outlook. This is something preventable or at least treatable. Then let's do something about it.
It appears to me from what you've just said that there's a lot of ignorance-driven sort of stigma attached to the tuberculosis of the spine, that it's usually the kind of myths that are generated by water cooler talk, beer hall talk, maybe even after church talk, that isn't really based on some scientific and factual knowledge?
Yes, that's very true. That's what I say, where education and information will be key in this situation. As I alluded, anybody and everybody is game to actually have TB.
Go ahead, Doc.
No, I was going to say inclusive of the TB, which is outside of the lungs, because I want to take away that picture where everybody is expecting someone who's coughing and who's very emaciated and sickly. Healthy people can have TB. Big, overweight people can have TB. You understand? So yeah, I have many patients who then come when you then diagnose them and tell them that, listen, I will do what is called a biopsy, which is open up, take a piece of the tissue, send it off to confirm that this is TB, or we do imaging like the MRI and x-rays. There are certain features sometimes that tell us straight out this is TB, and you tell them that, and they go into absolute denial, which becomes very difficult then to institute treatment, because TB spine is not the same as the pulmonary or lung TB, where your treatment is 6 months of medication and that's it. We are talking here a minimum of 9 months to 1 year of drinking drugs, even if you are feeling better. So I need the buy-in of the patient to get past the stigma or get past whatever issues they might have with what is then called TB of the spine, because you find even the family support is usually the issue, that how can you diagnose my mother as having TB, which for me is, listen, if you had to choose TB or cancer, you want your mother to have TB, because the outcome is much better.
Give us a call, 011-883-0702, and a very, very important part there about the family support, doctor, because I suppose, because the question I was going to ask is, what is the real consequence then of the stigma and some of the myths that are connected to TB of the spine, just in terms of the empirical stuff, the treatment, the psychological preparedness, and you've just spoken about the fact that family has a very, very serious role to play in all of this. Care to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, let me just go into it. As I explained, with TB treatment, firstly, it's accessible. You can get it in government hospitals. You can get it in private and private pharmacies, long as the doctor has been diagnosed it, especially TB of the spine. And we divide the treatment into phases, whereby the first 2 months is usually an active phase where the bacteria is busy being destructive. So there's different medication you drink in that. Yeah. And the remainder of the 7 months, so I'm talking about the 9 months one, so 2 and 7 months becomes, again, another different medication. So the problem we have is, if the family is not there to be supportive, patients tend to want to stop taking treatment once they feel better. Mm. And the thing is, once you are on the TB medication, you find that most patients within a month or two are already starting to feel better. And unfortunately, if you stop the treatment, you get undertreated. The symptoms can come back. The disease can worsen, especially I'm talking about TB spine. And then you can get progression of either weakness or back pain, and end up even to paralysis, depending what they were presenting with, because everybody is so overjoyed that now they're feeling better, they don't want to continue.
Yeah.
Hence the buy-in of the family to be supportive to the patient. And secondly, these drugs are effective, but remember, this is long-term medication for 9 months, which also has side effects, such as you can have vision problems. So that's why you have to sit down. There's a whole counseling that we do when we start this medication, that this is why we test the bloods. Every 3 months, I see all my patients. We repeat the bloods. We look at what symptoms are they complaining about. If they're complaining about vision, then I know which one of the TB drugs it is that I should remove. And we try not to give those to children, because you can imagine a child now ends up with a vision problem or blindness.
Yeah.
Then we look at things like their liver, their kidneys, because that in itself can also be affected, because, as I said, they're effective drugs, but they are strong medication. So you are needing the patient's buy-in, whereby there is a constant follow-up until they are fully treated. In government, we also have what we call DOTS, which is the direct observation treatment, and they have cards whereby it must be picked, and that's how we know that the patient is compliant, because compliance is key. If you take this treatment, you will be healed. Do you understand? It's just, it's a long time getting to the healing. But if a patient feels better and they stop treatment, now we have a different problem, which is called multi-drug resistant TB. We are talking about a different animal, which is usually more aggressive, more difficult to treat, and we have to change from the normal drugs that we treat with, which is called Rifafor or Rifina, to big drugs where we are having to give you IV via the drip, or we have to give you injection with bigger side effects and for a longer time. So you move from being treated for 9 months to having to be treated for 18 months.
Wow.
Some of these patients even have to be hospitalized in that same initial phase because they get very sick. So for me, if the patients could really push along with that first initial treatment whereby we don't end up with multi-drug resistance, it helps a lot because that one is more likely to be toxic. And on top of that, if you really then don't complete your multi-drug resistance as treatment, you can end up with what we call extreme XDR, which is like the super, super bug. So education is key, support is key.
Discipline is key, it sounds to me. Is an issue there, Dr. Bommel?
Yes, discipline is key, yes.
Let's talk to B in Cape Town. Good evening to you, B.
Oh, hi. Yes, a question and then just a statement. My question is that can you get paralyzed from having spinal TB? And the other statement is if you watch these slow motion films of a cough or a sneeze, it just shows you the spit going everywhere. I'm sure you've seen it, like shooting the apple. You just see, you know, the spit going everywhere. So should we all in Cape Town be walking around with the N95 mask in order for people not to breathe in our faces and so to prevent us from getting TB? I'll listen on the radio.
All right. Thank you very much, B. Dr. Lusanda, should we be wearing masks and can you be paralyzed as a result of TB of the spine?
Okay, I'll take both questions. No, we don't need to all be wearing masks. As I said, TB is a disease that has been here for more than a century. And masks, remember, were now a recent thing with COVID disease, whereby everyone was made aware more of the real airborne diseases. This is an opportunistic infection, which is what I tried to explain, that you can have TB of the spine and not have TB of the lungs. So it's two different ways of spread and pathology. So I don't want to create mass hysteria. And I was just giving an example of a lung TB, which is different from the spinal TB. Okay. The second one is, yes, you can develop paralysis from TB of the spine because it depends how extensive the TB is when you go and consult with myself or any other spine surgeon. So if it's just destruction of the bone, which is the vertebra that make up the spine, as I explained before, then usually those patients are still okay. What causes paralysis can be if there's an infection that spreads to press on the spinal cord, or the infection presses to spread to the nerves, or the actual destruction, which we call a deformity, goes to press on the spinal cord. So it becomes worse and worse and worse. So you see someone with a curved back, which starts falling and falling and falling. At some point, it will press on the spinal cord. That is when TB does and can cause paralysis.
Question from a listener on our WhatsApp line. Hi, Aubrey. Please ask the doctor if one can be infected with that TB if already vaccinated against TB as a child. And that's from Ziva.
Thank you, Aubrey, for that question, Ntiva. Most South Africans are all vaccinated against TB. That's why I was taking away the whole mask thing and mass hysteria with regards to that. It's that injection that kids get primarily after they are born called a BCG injection, and then they do a top-up of that injection run about 5 years of age. Okay. It's part of our national protocol that kids must be immunized. Right. Now, you can have that immunization, yet the child will then develop TB. This is what I was then trying to explain, that there is no actual clear cause that can say, because you've been immunized, you will then not develop TB. Most of the TB that occurs obviously happens with adults, but children get it too, and these children have been immunized. Hence, it's called an opportunistic infection, because these are compromised patients usually.
Those are the ones with comorbidities and so forth.
Yes, malnutrition, yep, and all those things that I touched on. That's why I said every South African, I'm not saying every, but the ones we have gone and had their immunizations as children, we all have been, but it doesn't mean you will not get it.
Yeah. You know, I'm reminded.
It probably just decreases the effects of how bad the TB would be.
I understand. Yeah. So it's a conversation that I remember from the whole COVID moment, when people were saying, but I got vaccinated and I still got it. It appears that vaccination, immunization is not guaranteed that you will not get to the disease.
Immunization tends to decrease the symptoms of the disease.
Yeah.
It's usually to decrease the effects. Yeah, I haven't come to any knowledge that it would totally prevent the disease. That's what I wanted to make clear for the listener who SMS'd earlier. And that is why they say in South Africa, things like the mental test, which is a test that you do for people who, children, it's for children, and you want to see have they been vaccinated. So in other countries, you would do it, and then you'd be like, oh, it is positive. With us, it would be positive, but what would count and be relevant would be, how positive is it? So we measure different lesions on the skin, and you see how big it is, then that is how you would know. You know what, this child is vaccinated, but this reaction is more than it should be. So from that, you can then look at the symptoms, what else are they presenting with, and take it from there and do the relevant investigation.
The spine is part of, I suppose, the the whole brain system. I forget what the right term is, but the brain, the spine.
Continuation.
Yeah.
It's a continuation from the base of the brain. Yes.
Is it possible for the bacteria causing spinal tuberculosis to attack the brain too?
Yes. When it does, it's called TB meningitis. So you can have the initial then TB within TB. That's why I was trying to explain. It usually affects the bone. When it affects the bone in the spine, it doesn't mean it has spread to the actual spinal cord. The spinal cord is usually encased. It's encased in three layers, okay, and that usually protects the nerve inside the actual spinal cord.
Right.
But if the bacteria that is within, now that's busy destroying the actual spine, goes through and destroys the layers that are protecting the spine, then it can go into the fluid that goes around the spinal cord, which is called the CSF, cerebrospinal fluid, and that can go up and spread into the brain. So you can end up with TB of the brain. You can have even TB of the eye. TB can affect anything. We have TB of the wrist, TB of the toe, TB of the knee. We even have classification for TB of the hip. I'm trying to dispel that thing where people think TB is just TB of the lungs.
Of the lungs. Malero to Witness says on the WhatsApp line, good evening, Aubrey and your guests. Could someone who has been diagnosed with TB, and I imagine that's TB of the lungs, and be treated, experience the relapse, resurfacing of the disease after some years. If it relapses, will the symptoms be similar to the previous ones? And that's from Maleroto Witness Mpahlele.
Thank you, Aubrey, again, and Maleroto. Yes, it can occur. If you've had TB before, you can have TB again. Whether you were HIV positive or negative, you can have it multiple times, isn't it? That's why I'm explaining that the initial time that you had it could be that initial incident, then later you become immunocompromised again, and then it's an opportunistic infection, you end up with it. But it doesn't mean you'll have the same type of TB. So you might have had TB of the spine, but now you end up with TB of the lung or vice versa or another organ. So we don't count it as a precursor to you having other multiple TBs. There are many health workers who've had TB because we were then exposed to patients who have got TB. Do you understand?
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that because you've had that, now 5 years from now, I'll have another bout of TB. Stress, by the way, as well, decreases immunity. This is where I want to take away that thing where people are thinking it's these sticky patients who are walking around coughing on people and things like that. Anything that is going to decrease your immunity can then predispose. But we just know that it's more common in the lower socioeconomic situations because of the things like malnutrition and poverty. Yeah.
Tabo Kumalo on Twitter says, or on X, my apologies, says, good evening, Aubrey. My mother has arthritis of the spine. How is this different from TB of the spine? Her condition affects her ability to walk, especially long distance. What treatment is there for this condition, and is it treatable? Well, I don't know whether Doc is going to speak about arthritis of the spine specifically, but Doc. There you go.
No, I can touch on it because I'm a spine surgeon after all. Arthritis of the spine is different to TB of the spine. So TB of the spine, as I explained, is because there's a bacteria that has infected the actual bones. It's usually the bones that are affected, and then that can spread, right? Now, arthritis of the spine is a different thing in that it's an inflammatory condition. So what happens is there's inflammation that involves the joints in the spine, and that creates friction. The friction irritates the nerves. So usually that's why his mom probably can't walk, because those nerves are irritated and inflamed, and she gets neuropathic pain. So her legs are heavy, they've got pins and needles, so she struggles with walking, as well as the joints grow bigger than they should be, which the body doesn't like, because now it changes the biomechanics of the spine and her spine becomes unstable. So you'll find that his mom usually has to lean over when he's walking or has to use a walking stick. So that's the body's way to try and compensate for this change of the biomechanics. So it's a totally different disease. We treat that also depending what stage of arthritis does she have. Medication, anti-inflammatories, if the nerves are involved, we give them nerve pain medication to just try and help with regards to that. Then that's where the physiotherapy and biokinetics also come in, and things like bracing. If that doesn't help, or as I said, depending how extensive the arthritis is, we do things like facet blocks, epidurals. If that fails, then you do surgery. So it would also depend when we were to see and assess his mother and how bad things were. Is the spinal cord involved? Is it the nerves? Is it just the bone? Or is it all of that? So based on that, in my clinical assessment and taking the history, I then formulate a plan for the patient. So each patient is different.
Doctor, I often ask this question to the experts that I speak to. What about diet? What about exercise? Does that have any role to play in, I don't know, helping you develop some form of resistance or some form of insulation against a disease such as TB of the spine?
Well, Aubrey, as I said, malnutrition is one of the main causes of this decreased immunity. So if you can look at that whereby you address the issues of causing malnutrition, that's usually access, obviously, to food. So food is important. What types of food you are eating is important. Things that will boost your immunity is also important. Your vitamins and things like that, so that you are not prone to opportunistic infections. Exercise, for me, that is usually looking at things like the inflammatory diseases and things like that. But we have found that in obese patients, that causes comorbidities, which can then predispose you to a low immunity, such as diabetes. So there's always some coexisting relationship between things like exercise as well as diet and stress.
Dr. Lusanda Bomela, how do we get a hold of you if we want to consult? We want to hear a little bit more, talk to you a little bit more. As listeners, how do we get in touch with you?
Thanks, Aubrey, for that. I am based at Busamed Modderfontein Hospital, which is in Limbro Park by Joburg. But the number for the office is 011-458-2133, as well as you can just email us at info@drbomela.co.za. And I also have a website at www.drbomelainc.com.